Hello and welcome to the MoneyWise podcast. Each episode, we'll get to the bottom of key personal finance issues affecting your money. I'm Brianne Horn, a reporter at MoneyWise, and today I'm joined by MoneyWise editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and deputy editor Sam Barker. Let's kick things off with you, Sam. Big news about the state pension this week.
That's right, Brianne. So what this is all about, there is an issue with pensioners and benefits claimants who collect their money in cash in person, and this will include payments such as the state pension. So the issue is these people could be running out of money because they cannot or do not want to leave the house during the coronavirus lockdown. And they don't know about alternative ways to get that money. And this is coming from a former pensions minister, Steve Webb. So there are a lot of people in this group. There are around 900,000 retirees and those on benefits who get these payments in cash. And what you would do is go to a post office counter and get the money using your post office card account. But obviously, during the lockdown, we've been advised to stay at home as much as possible. And many of that group will overlap with the 1.5 million people who have been told to shield. So this is, they've been advised to stay at home for at least 12 weeks because they will be at the most risk of going to hospital if they caught coronavirus. So people in this camp include those with lowered immune systems and people going through chemotherapy, for example. So the government, the Department of Work and Pensions and the Post Office launched a scheme last week to send these groups cash through the post, but they have only directly contacted 27,000 people. Their options seem to be go to the post office as normal, which could be an issue health-wise, to not collect the benefits at all, or to get someone else to go in your place. And the risk with that is that there's a health issue for them, and it opens you up to possible fraud if you were to give out your card and PIN number. That's assuming that you have one in the first place. Both Steve Webb and Stephen Cameron, who's a pensions expert at Aegon, are calling for the government to get alternatives sorted out as quickly as possible. So it's worth mentioning that when we put this to the DWP, they very much doubled down on what they were doing and said that they were doing enough. Though I'm not certain I agree, and this could well have been tackled earlier.
That's really interesting. Obviously, there are a lot of people that will be stuck without any payments and may not have been contacted under this new scheme that the DWP and the Post Office have launched. Anybody who might be sitting at home wondering, how do I get my money if they haven't been contacted about the scheme, what can they do?
So the good news is that they do have some options and they can make alternative arrangements. However, all of these options are pre-coronavirus. So some of them do still involve going outside. So pick with care from the following menu. So option A is just to wait because you will be contacted by the DWP at some point. But the kind of pre-existing ways of getting that money, the first one is called being an appointee. So you can pick someone to get authorised by the DWP to get that money on your behalf. Another way is known as permanent agents. Sadly, this is not a kind of James Bond 007 thing, but you can nominate someone that you trust to become a permanent agent on your account. They will be given their own card and PIN number to get the money on your behalf. Now, unfortunately, the kicker with this is that you need to complete a permanent agent access form in order to do this. And that form you need to get from a post office branch. So someone would need to run down and get that for you, but that is an option that's available. Another option is to, if you can, change the way that you get paid, because it might be a good time to maybe get to grips with getting this money sent directly to your bank account if you can.
Thanks, Sam. That's really useful information. Now, Rachel, the coronavirus pandemic has caused a lot of volatility and uncertainty in the investment world. What can we learn from history about investing through a downturn?
Well, so this month, Rob Griffin, who writes a column for us every month, looked at what can we learn from history, because this is not the first time we've had a downturn like this. It can feel like it when you're in the middle of it. It all feels like uncharted waters, completely unknown and quite scary. But we've been here before. And there are lots of things that we can learn from previous crises. We can look at how long it normally takes to recover. The important thing here being that markets do recover eventually. It just takes a while. The average, Rob tells us, is 648 days. While that's the average, it can take a lot longer. So the financial crisis, it lost the FTSE All Share, so that's an index of all of the companies listed on the UK Stock Exchange, lost almost 50% of their value in the financial crisis around 2007-2009. And that took 1,529 days to recover. It can take a while, but it does tend to go up ultimately. And that can be a really useful lesson for a beginner investor. We say that when you start investing, you should have a minimum time frame of 5 to 10 years. And hopefully, while markets go down, they go up over the long term and over a time period of roughly that length. If you do experience a downturn, you should have time to build up your pot again and recover from it. So we've had many. We had the dot-com bubble about 20 years ago when that burst, following SARS in 2003, of course, as I say, the global financial crisis. They're all different. And we need to remember here that this is quite an unusual set of circumstances, a global pandemic with about half the human population in some form of lockdown over the last month or so is very different. But also the level of stimulus, of support to help economies around the world is also unprecedented. So the support from central banks to cut interest rates and pump money into the economy, and also from governments to support people. We can learn things. There are some similarities. There are also some differences. The other thing to mention, though, is that while markets are still down, they're about 23% up today, which is on Thursday, about 23% up, the FTSE in the UK. US markets are also up considerably as well. So while there was a huge crash leading up to and just at the beginning of lockdown, things have started to recover. So people are starting to wonder, well, what on earth is going on? Because we're still in lockdown. There's still a lot of uncertainty about how economies will recover around the world, what that will look like, and how long, how many years possibly this could last for. Why is it that markets have recovered? And this, again, is something that we can learn from crashes in the past, that crashes and recoveries follow different trajectories. It's not necessarily they go down all in one go, they go up all in one go as well. It may be that that's what's happened now and we will see a kind of V-shaped recovery. It may be, as has happened in the past, that there are a series of upticks and then crashes again, up and then down, and it remains very volatile. So while it looks like we're going in the right direction now, there's absolutely no guarantee that we're going to continue to do so.
Well, it does sound like there might be a glimmer of hope for investors. If you actually haven't taken the leap yet and are thinking about investing, is now the right time to start?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? When is the right time to invest? I mean, if we could absolutely see into the future, the best time, of course, would be when the market's at its lowest, things are cheapest, and then you ride the recovery. No one can tell when we've hit the bottom, if things are going to get worse. So in that context, the best time to invest is always now, whenever now is that you're starting. Don't try to guess what's going on. Just get going and invest a little bit regularly, and then if things improve, you'll benefit from that. If things get worse, well, at least you haven't put all of your money in at the start. So regular investing can be a really good way of not exposing you to the same level of volatility, but with all the usual caveats that you should only start investing if, as I said, you have a very good time frame ahead of you, 5-10 years minimum, and that you've got the money to do so, that you've paid off your sort of regular debts and have a little bit of disposable income that you can afford to lock away for a while.
Thanks, Rachel.
So, Brianne, you've been looking into car insurance and how insurers might be able to return money to drivers. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, please?
Yes. Drivers aren't on the road as much, where they don't actually have to leave their house due to the social distancing restrictions introduced by the government. And as a result, it means that there is less risk of them sort of getting into accidents on the road, and as a result, insurers don't have to pay out as much in insurance claims. Now, some insurers have taken the step and started to refund this excess cash that they have back to drivers, because car insurance is a legal obligation in the UK. You have to have at least third-party insurance, even if you don't drive your car that often. In order to not have to pay insurance, you actually have to declare it as off the road, and this can take quite a lot of time. So a lot of drivers who are at home paying for insurance aren't actually using the policy to the extent of the miles that they are supposed to be paying for. And one insurer in particular, Admiral, has taken the step to actually refund customers. As of last week, they announced that they'd be giving a £25 rebate to each customer who has a car or van insured with them. This has sort of put a big spotlight on the car insurance industry as a whole, and it's called into question if other insurers will take the same action. We spoke to a number of insurers. Some of them have started to introduce payment holidays for customers. Other insurers are offering additional help and support to NHS key workers. I think what Admiral has done is a great start, especially since a lot of people are paying for a car insurance that they're not actually getting the full extent of the policy for. At the moment, there has been sort of tepid response from the rest of the industry.
That is a shame. But is there more, do you think, that car insurers can do to help drivers who might not be clocking up the miles at the moment?
Looking at the feedback that we've received from insurers, it does seem like they could be doing a lot more. One industry expert that we spoke to, who works for one of the top three insurers in the UK, has said that they do see them recouping a lot of costs from drivers not being on the roads and therefore may be eligible to give refunds in the future. But it does seem that as drivers have been off the road for quite a while, that more insurance companies could be offering refunds to customers. Or what one insurer has proposed is that the amount of money being paid at the moment should be added on as extra months once the lockdown is over, just to make sure that customers are getting the value of the policies that they're paying for and not paying for miles that they're not using.
Okay, so kind of a bit of a patchwork quilt of options depending on who your insurer is by the sounds of it, but that's good to know.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the MoneyWise podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a rating and follow us on whatever platform you're listening on. If you have any personal finance questions, email them in to editor@moneywise.co.uk. You can also drop us a message on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at MoneyWise Online.